Hello, it is time once again for Movie Mastery. It's the podcast where you decide what we watch, and you sons of bitches.
No, I thank them. I thank them profusely.
So I decided to live dangerously for our In Theaters Now episode this month.
At my prodding.
And put Cats on the poll, even though it came out the previous month, and also there was a very good chance it would not be in theaters when we went to go see it.
I had to get a babysitter for this.
Ooh, there was one theater in all of San Diego with one showing a day of Cats.
Yep.
And I, honestly, I assume it's already gone now. Like, we managed to catch it on the way out.
Well, we saw it for you.
Yes, indeed. We went and saw Cats, and we'll never be the same again.
That's pretty true. Yeah, so there you go.
Now, obviously we are, as always on the show, going to get into the full, I don't think there's spoilers, but spoiler review for this after the music. But first, I know, Jeff, that you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the previews for this movie.
And I appreciate the introduction there, John. So that's very nice. Yeah. That's who we are. But yeah, I absolutely do, because this movie, I had heard other people talk about the previews, and it sounds like it's pretty much a package. So there are several, and almost all of them are worth talking about. I think we could probably dispense with the Sonic the Hedgehog one, which was serviceable.
If
you know, I really do kind of feel like he sounds too much like just Ben Schwartz. but you know, it doesn't really matter. But no, we start with some cichlit, some Christian-style cichlit, no
Ooh,
less.
Ooh, Christian cichlit.
Yeah, where our main character is a good Christian man and a rock star and a super solid hunk of all-American man. But can he fall in love with a girl who is Christian and has a disease?
Oh my goodness, she has unspecified health problems.
She has sickosis.
She might not make it, but maybe. If God is with us.
Or she dies at the end and it's all very sad. Christian cichlit. It's rad. And then we go right to...
Well, I will say this. At least in the Christian cichlit, there is the option that they get better because it's about miracles.
That is true.
In normal cichlit, it is always, this person gonna die.
Yeah, no. Maybe off screen after the book ends, but... I love that is a trend that's happening. And then we go right to In the Heights, which I am honestly very excited about, In the Heights.
Oh, yeah. Lin-Manuel Miranda, new musical movie. Looks, at least from the trailer, the music seems pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Lin-Manuel in general, so I'm really looking forward to it. But the trailer is cut to kind of give you the idea of the story. The trailer is perfect at conveying the basic beats of a hero journey while giving you absolutely no details at all.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is like, I have a dream. You can't have that dream.
But wait, with strength, can I? You can't. But if I, with friends,
we're here for you. Dreams.
Then perhaps dreams. It's just, wait, what?
What? Did you just give me every beat of this movie?
But absolutely no nouns of any kind?
No. No one's really doing anything to be like, here's a specific idea. It's just kind of like, here's generic stuff that might be a
Once
a
there
theme.
Was a guy with a dream, but there was a problem. But then, with teamwork, the problem may be overcome in the Heights.
Oh, man. The previews for this were fabulous because it really gets you in the mood to watch some dumb nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, there were several other previews. I feel like granted, there was the Call of the Wild one, which...
God, I don't know.
Never seen that before. A big fake Shrek dog. That's the first one of those in Alaska, that's for sure.
God, I don't know who was like, let me read Call of the Wild and then go, oh, this needs to be a buddy comedy. And you're like, did we read the same book? What is happening right now?
Well, I don't really mind that they added some comedic elements to Call of the Wild, which granted is a very serious book with some very serious elements. And yeah, in the preview for it, it's all just like, he gets snow on his nose. He gets to sleep in Harrison Ford's bed.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing is like, you did you turn this into a comedy? Because that is the only thing you are showing me.
The weirdest thing, though, is just that they made up a fake dog for it. Like, there are hundreds of millions of dogs, and dogs are the best animal to train.
And you could get them to do things on film pretty easily.
We've been doing it for a century.
Anyway, here's this weird CGI dog to take you out of any moment.
Anytime you cut to him, you're going to be like, oh, man.
Oh, God. I'm just waiting for this guy to make DreamWorks face at me.
I'm going to keep... I'm waiting for him to announce that he's going to swipe something and then be admonished not to.
Oh, it's a real problem,
so,
I'm going to say.
So anyway, the previews were glorified crazy, and they really... Yeah, they did help set us up. I mean, if you want to talk about the other two, you're welcome. There was the Sonic one, and then there was the... exceedingly
Aretha
short
Franklin.
Aretha Franklin, which might as well be called Let's Get This Done Before Jennifer Hudson Ages Another Year.
Let's just get it out while we can. All right. So we're going to dive real deep into the Cats lore.
Oh, there's so much to say.
And all the intricate plot happens in this movie.
The plot that was added to the film to have it be a film.
We're going to play a little music, and we will be right back with our full review of Cats. Into the sea, you and me, all the years and no one heard. I'll show you in spring, it's a treacherous thing. We miss you, yes. Love Cats. We miss Cats. So wonderfully, 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 wonderfully. We are back.
I mean, I guess for this film, it's best to just start right where the film starts, because it's crazy Tim Burton Gotham City circus purple lighting.
I mean, it's like 1920s London.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. But I mean, again, it's everything's purple, everything's Dutch angles, and there's... I'm going to go ahead and say this. This sounds like it's... The score of this movie is done in the synth style that the musical is in a lot of parts as well, because it was written in the 70s, right? I think. But the score to the beginning of this film and then throughout most of it sounds like it was performed by Mannheim Steamroller falling down a haunted well.
Which, okay, I've only looked up one song from the original Broadway production of this, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, this is just Christmas music, so that makes sense.
Yeah, most of the score to this movie sounds like what I imagine Tim Burton hears when black people talk. just circus eating, and then he's like, you don't fit in my film.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
The beginning of this is a rich lady drives a car and throws a bag into some garbage town.
And there's a number of very human looking cats watching and prowling around.
And at first, I want to say this is going to be the first time we touch on one of these. Has been brought up a lot about this.
Mm-hmm.
When you first get the cats in this,
yeah,
it is mostly in silhouette, and they're just like in the dark prowling around and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I'm sort of fine, because when you watch Cats as a stage play, none of the weirdness of it really matters, because you're like, this is a dude in a leotard. I get it.
Also,
and
they're in your face.
He's trying to be like evocative of a cat, but that's it.
Yeah. Well, they're in your face, so you get the shock value from that right away in the Cats movie, too, because the opening, that Jellicle song, since the opening, is an audience interaction song, yeah, where they're like walking up through the crowd. So you kind of have, it's big and in your face. You're like, these people are all wearing shaggy coats and they all have dumb makeup and the names are things like Skintlebomb.
With a musical, you're at least like, this is a person.
This is what I signed up for.
Well, no, in the musical, you're like, this is a person in a costume that I can see.
That is true.
In the movie, as soon as they come out from the dark, you're like, oh, this is uncanny, and I do not like this.
Sometimes their faces are clearly floating around wrong on the wrong part of their CGI faces or heads, but overall, the physicality of the performers does come through enough that it's impressive to watch them move around.
Yes, but the thing I'm saying is, when you see someone that's like, I have cat fur and twitchy cat ears and an actual cat tail and human hands.
No, I know. I'm not saying it looks good. I don't want you to get that impression, listeners. I'm just saying that these actors are very physically gifted, and it kind of shows. But the thing I really wanted to point, as the bag hits the ground and all the cats start sort of appearing in windows and from the sides of cars and what have you, it is looks exactly like when old movies would do tribes people appearing from the jungle. Because it's all like they're shot in the shadows and they kind of are weirdly crawling down the sides of buildings. It really evokes like old Indiana Jones stuff. It's a crazy moment. And it only happens that one time. Through the rest of the movie, the cats, you know, they're unrelenting. There's never not a part of the movie where there's no cats.
I mean, it is.
From this point forward. I mean, because literally, this movie goes breakless from this point. Like, this moment at the beginning, like, you've got your haunted circus music playing. You've got a bunch of cats walking around a bag. From this point forward, anytime a song ends, it's because another song just started.
Which is the musical.
Yeah, no, I know. The musical is 2 hours of cats introducing themselves, and then one of them dies.
But with this one, they did at least add some dialogue. Like, but to me, that was almost worse because it just takes you so far out. Because when you're watching something and you're like, oh, this is a song about someone named Rumpelteazer. Let's cut to James Corden and he makes a quip. And you're like, that quip is very 2000s and does not fit in what we are watching.
And him and Rebel Wilson were clearly allowed to punch up the script with some improv stuff. But all the improv stuff is just things like, well, look what the cat dragged in. I don't think you have the whiskers to pull that off. And you're just like, dude, why is this added? Ugh. Who thought this? I guess it was Tom Hooper.
Yeah, the point where Corden has to break the flow of a song to point out that it shouldn't rhyme. I was like, okay, I get it. That's very 2000s humor.
Also,
to be like, you can't just say Thames because it rhymes with Ames. It's Thames.
Unfortunately, that was mostly just to deny us the gift of a song by Ray Winstone, which is cruel.
It was like, oh, here it is. Ray Winstone doing an entire cat song.
Oh, I'm a cat. I am. Indy, I betrayed you. No. Stop. Don't you fucking stop him.
How dare you stop Growl Tiger.
All right, so one of the problems that this movie has narratively is that it hinges on two characters who are both ciphers, in that their stories are mostly one of them is going to introduce you to all the cats, and the other one is going to passively observe all the cats, and those are your main characters in the film, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, Victoria is the cat in the bag that we saw, and she is going to be our audience stand-in that is the reason that anything gets explained.
One thing, her voice is amazing, and her ballet sequences are all incredible. She's awesome, and I'm really, and she's new. The actor is like, I'm sure she's
brand new.
Well, she gets cloned. She gets the and introducing credit.
Yes.
And I'm really hoping that this doesn't murder her career, because she was really interesting. Her name was like Francesca Hayward. I'm really looking forward to seeing if she gets to do anything else. But yeah, Victoria, the white cat, who's just sort of the generic, you know, look what's going on. She's the Harry Potter of this movie.
Well, yeah, she's clearly supposed to be like a kitten to everyone else's full-grown cat, basically. Yeah,
I don't want to even think about that, given the amount of time she spends eye-fucking and face-fucking everybody else
she spends a lot of time being like, yo, both Rum Tum Tugger and Mr. Mistopheles can get it.
Yeah. No, she's got a lot of I've got available face.
Yeah.
So I don't want to think she's like, oh, I was 3 days old.
Too bad.
Yeah, that's what the movie wants. It's not. But anyway, yeah, they free her from the bag, and then they ask her if she's Jellicle, and before we get a chance to answer, we immediately lose all hope from the Jellicle word, because the first song, Jellicle Songs for Jellicle Cats, is, oh my god, it is an introduction to the film. The purple lighting doesn't go away. Like I was saying before, this really feels like an old Batman movie, because the purple lighting, the Dutch angles, and the themed gang is singing a themed gang song is very, very like Batman and Robin.
The whole thing is going to make you essentially from this point forward, just not be able to question the word Jellicle anymore.
Oh, no.
Because if they had just said, like, hey, we're the Jellicle cats and left it, as an audience member, you'd be like, what the fuck is Jellicle? But because they sing an entire song where every other word is Jellicle, you're like, that has no meaning anymore. Words have no meaning. Life is pointless. Show me more cat songs.
This is like when you get caught saying Jellicle in the garage and your dad makes you smoke the whole pack of Jellicle. That's how the beginning of this movie starts. It's like, yo, I'll teach you to smoke Jellicles. Jellicle, Jellicle, Jellicle. Jellicles are, Jellicles do, and Jellicle cats and Jellicle dogs. Just no such thing as Jellicle dogs.
There's a Jellicle moon and we're Jellicle cats and a Jellicle ball with Jellicle hands.
And he's just like, okay, you did it. You inundated me with the word Jellicle, so from now on I will just ignore it when it's in things.
Yeah, that is just a sound that is made. Okay, sure.
The song would be better if the word Jellicle was just carefully omitted from the entire thing. Because are and do.
I'll be cats.
There's a moon and a sky and a ball and some hands.
Some hands. And they're human, and it's creepy.
They have claws. It's real weird. So so they sing this song, and this song actually, despite the huge amount of the usage of the word Jellicle, is a good song.
I mean, I'm going to go ahead and say there are about three good songs in this.
Yeah, no, there's this one, there's Skimbleshanks, and there's Memories. And I think we're going to be in full agreement on that,
yes,
aren't we?
Yeah, obviously.
I would also throw a little bit to Rum Tum Tugger's song, just because, I mean, it's Jason Derulo doing James Brown. It's fine.
It's kind of a bad song, though.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. I thought the performance was excellent.
Oh, no, that's the thing is, you look at a lot of people's performance of it, I'm like, you're giving it your all, and good for you, but this is a garbage song.
No, that's fair. That's very fair. So, they do a whole thing where they're going to teach Victoria what a Jellicle cat is, which apparently is just every cat forever, don't worry about it, and also, since the word Jellicle is used for everything, she learns nothing, which you can tell because at the end of the song she just stands there looking at them, and
she's,
they're like,
what the fuck is a Jellicle,
what was any of that? And they're like, well, hang on, follow us this way, we're gonna do an extended no words dance sequence in a graveyard.
Well, first they have to be like, hey, come with me over here, and then there is a group of three mean girl cats
that exist
in this movie. We never get their names, but they're like, who are you? I'm Victoria. Yeah, but what's your other name?
Oh, yeah, that's right. What's your other name? And then our narrator for the film, who's a cat who's in the movie, played by Robbie Fairchild, great look, who never gets named. I would say he's the second lead of this film.
Oh, yeah, he's in all of the scenes, basically.
Yeah.
And he is, at least until we get to the point where the Jellicle ball begins, essentially the protagonist, the person moving the plot forward.
He either gets lead or major part in like three songs in the movie, and you never know his name. Like, if you're a cat's head, I guess you're going to know he's Munkastrap.
You're like, oh boy, Munkastrap, that's what I was waiting for.
But you never get it, but he comes out and he gives us a little song about how all cats have three names, you see.
Yeah, see, one is the name that like people give you, and that's
Toby.
That's going to be Toby or Victoria or James or whatever.
Yeah.
And then he's like, and then there's the third name, which is the name that you don't tell anyone, and it's just your name. And whenever you see a cat staring off into the distance, they're contemplating their secret name. And then he doesn't tell you what the second name is, but I assume it's Bumblefarts.
Yeah, it's the names that that only cats call each other, because no one has ever named their cat like Rum Tum Tugger.
Yeah,
actually, that's probably not true. I guess based on the fact that the musical's been in the theaters for 60 years or whatever it is, people have probably named their cats all of these things now.
Oh, yeah. If there was never a cat named Rumple Teaser, I would be amazed.
Yeah, there's definitely someone out there right now with a cat named Griddle Bones.
Yeah,
It's just, it happened. So yeah, he gives her this whole thing about how all cats have three names, and then that plot is dropped.
Yeah, we don't ever get her second name.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no indication that she has come up with a third name. It is just, hey, you're going to meet a lot of weird-sounding cats, and I just need to explain that that's a different
name. That's their second name. Now, what's your second name? And she's like, Sammy Hagar's Wango Tango Cabaret. And he's like, oh, no, never mind. No,
well, you're Victoria.
You're Victoria. That's funny. Victoria's your second name. So then they head to a graveyard to do an extended ballet sequence with very little words.
Yep.
At which point we get the introduction of Mr. Mistopheles, who is in this movie is even more of a magician cat than usual. They've given him... He's one of the cats.
Instead of just being magical, he is a literal magician.
Yeah, like actually a magician with a magician jacket and a top hat and all that. He's one of the clothes cats.
He's using a pencil as a wand, which I thought was adorable.
It was cute, yeah. But he's one of the clothes cats, and there are a couple of them who are like always in clothes.
Yeah. And it's kind of disconcerting whenever you see one of the clothes cats without clothes.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where you see like Porky Pig has always had a shirt, right? But no pants.
Yeah.
And you just accept it. And then you're like, why does he wear a shirt and no pants? So you're like, well, why does Bugs Bunny not even throw the shirt?
But it's cartoon rules. The problem with this is when you've got a cat and they're wearing the clothes in this, you just sort of accept it the same way you accept Porky Pig without pants and a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
However,
they keep taking their clothes off.
I was like, but if I were to have a cartoon of Porky Pig and then he strips that shirt off, I'd be like, oh no, now that pig is naked.
And I understand why they do that with Porky Pig, because he's flesh colored. So you got to put a shirt on him so people aren't just like, where's his nipples? Why doesn't he have like 12 of them like a pig would?
Why ain't he got them nips?
Where's them pig nips? It's the 1930s.
Also, this is our new cat, Pig Nips.
It's the 1930s, and we are demanding information about our movie pigs. Okay, so after this long sequence in the introduction of the clumsy but affectionate Mr. Mistopheles, who is portrayed in a sort of... this is a little dove, like a weak little pigeon boy that I want to take care of kind of energy.
Oh, he's definitely got sad little pillow boy energy that radiates.
Yeah, he's there so that women in the audience will want to feed something soup.
Yeah, this is the kind of cat where you're just like, oh, you.
Oh, they should have made him shivering with CGI. But then finally, Victoria's like, well, what is a Jellicle cat? And why would someone want to ascend to the Heaviside Lair? Which, by the way, if you haven't watched Cats, the basic premise of the film is that they all sing and dance until one cat chooses another cat to die and get a second life, potentially.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and throw this possibility out to you.
Yeah.
Now, I thought of this theory while I was watching the movie before I lost my mind.
Yeah, this movie's got a lose your mind threshold.
There's a moment where everything shatters.
I think it happened at different times for both of us, but but there's a level.
But I was watching and I was like, okay, what if this whole thing is... These are dead cats.
Oh, and the Heaviside
Layer is a resurrection of them into a new cat life.
I could actually see that this is and that would explain why everyone's got their weirdest name instead of like their human name.
Yeah, and also you'd have things like, oh, old Deuteronomy has been around for like hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, it's because she keeps resurrecting and coming back again.
Well, they did mention that she's been the Jellicle cat several times.
Yeah.
And has died and reascended. So that does make sense. And also the fact that we see...
And Victoria has a song about dancing with ghosts, so...
Well, yeah. And also she's delivered to the movie by bag.
Yeah, she's in a bag that gets thrown sort of in the garbage.
Yeah.
You could just go, oh, this is a dead cat.
Yeah, so if you're wondering if we just cracked the case of this musical made in the 70s...
Angelicle stands for Angelicle.
Angelicle stands for Dear Little, but sure, I'll take it. It's fine. It's fine, I'll take it. Before we get a chance to head inside, I wanted to mention a few more things about the Jellicle song. First of all, it does feature the introduction of the film's villain, McCavity, the cat played by Idris Elba, because he gets one line in the song, which is the word, what?
Idris Elba, in this movie, constantly has one of the few people that has lines instead of just parts of a song, but also all of his magic powers are by him intensely saying one word.
Yeah, this time he's not casting a spell.
I mean, he kind of does. He turns the poster for Moriarty into McCavity.
Yeah, which is a whole thing, reference to T.S. Eliot or whatever. But yeah, I don't think T.S. Eliot wrote the Sherlock books. Don't send me any letters about that. I know who Arthur Conan Doyle is. What I'm saying is that McCavity was a joke about Moriarty in the first place, please and thank you. But no, he turns this poster into a McCavity poster, and then he just goes,
what?
And then he's just gone until we need him again. So I just wanted to mention that that occurs. Then we get Munkastrap being like, well, let me show you what a Jellicle cat is. I will show you an example of a Jellicle cat.
Let's go meet our first Jellicle cat, Jenny Annie Dots.
Now, why he doesn't just go, all these people around us are Jellicle cats. Why
I am a Jellicle cat. Yeah. Let me explain myself to you.
Let me introduce you to Griddlebones or Cocopato or Shtick
Jelly Lolo.
Shtick Duke Laboo or
Undleballs.
Ludicolo. This one's Pikachu. Because honestly, we were talking about this before the recording, that half the cats sound like a Pikachu's, or sorry, Pokemon's, and the other half sound like 18th century diseases that mostly affected pirates.
Oh, yeah. You're like, okay, you see something like Jenny Any Dots,
mm-hmm.
and you're like, oh, a Jenny Any Dots could be a Pokemon.
Yeah, or a Munkastrap sounds like it could potentially be.
Munkastrap!
Yeah, or I think there's one called Tantomile.
Yeah, Tantomile is very clearly a Pokemon.
Yeah, there's no way that's not a Pokemon. But on the other hand, you hear something like Mungo Jerry or Jenny Any or Rumpelteazer, and you're like, oi, law, I can't go sailing this month. I got a case of the Mungo Jerrys.
Yeah, obviously.
There's the two kinds of cats. Me rum tums all tugging. I can't go on. I can't go on the ship, Captain.
So Jenny Any Dots is Garfield. Moving on.
just skip her for time. Jenny Any Dots is Rebel Wilson's character. She's what they consistently refer to as a Gumby cat. Now, here's a question.
Is it Gumpy or Gumby?
Gumby. And John, okay. Let me ask you a question. Do you think she's a Gumby cat because she is portly or because she can magically train mice and cockroaches to do dance numbers?
I believe it's because she is lazy.
Okay, so it's just that she's a lazy doer.
She lies around.
Okay, yeah. So she's the Gumby cat who...
It's a house cat. And I think the entire thing about, like, oh, she trains mice and cockroaches to do things is because she's a house cat that won't even hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, she doesn't kill any of the mice or cockroaches that are around the house. She just plays with them.
Yeah, so basically, like we were saying, this movie is just... And the musical itself is just, here's an introduction to a bunch of cats that T.S. Eliot thought were cute. And so did Andrew Lloyd Webber. And so did Tom Hooper. But mostly it's like cat stereotypes, right? So this one's the fat, lazy cat that lives in your house and won't go hunting after the mice and bugs that infest the house because they've become accustomed to it.
It's just Garfield.
It's just Garfield. Except Garfield never takes his own skin off to reveal a second set of skin with a
with
hot pants and halter combo. Yeah.
I took my skin off and there were clothes and a new skin under it.
The thing about that, beyond the fact that it's horrifying,
you know, beyond the fact that you see it and immediately have a gut reaction of horror.
Yeah,
yes.
Beyond the fact that it's terrifying that she apparently has another cat's skin that she wears as an overcoat over her own skin. Beyond that, the fact that it isn't just an affectation of the song, but rather shows up later as a power that she has that lets her escape from a situation is madness.
Well, that is this entire thing. Yes.
So she does a song about how she's, honestly, it's not even really her song. She sings in it, but so does Munkastrap. And it's just her being like, oh, I'm lazy and fat and I train mice to do song numbers and I eat these cockroaches and look
and
at
they're
me.
Like, hey, why would you want a new life if all you do is laze around and you're happy? Oh, I don't want to be in this kitchen anymore.
That was a very important point, because one of the major things throughout the course of this film is that there are apparently like six cats that are eligible for the whole Heaviside Layer Ascension thing. Like, I don't know if they're just the ones who know they're the contenders or what the deal is.
Or if they're like, oh, you have to do a submission process.
Yeah, maybe they're the one. Yeah, they found the golden ticket in the Wonka bar.
Who knows?
Something like that. Because they're like, well, why do you want to become a Jellicle cat? Because I'm sick of living in this kitchen.
Yeah.
But then we see Buster for Jones, the next guy.
No, we see Rum-Tum Tugger the next guy.
Sorry. Rum-Tum Tugger presumably just wants a new life because he's crazy and confused. But ultimately, of the cats who want new lives, most of them have reasons.
Yeah.
But there are a few who straight up just don't, and you're just like, why would you want a new life? Your shit seems like it's in order.
Yeah, Rum-Tum Tugger is the stereotype of the cat where it's just like, oh, you let them out, and they meow to come back in, and they're never happy with whatever you give them.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's Rum-Tum Tugger's entire thing, and it is a waste of Jason Derulo. He does not say Jason Derulo once.
It's true. He never says the name of the actor. He also doesn't really ever do a drop of, like, Rum-Tum Tugger, which would have been great if he had...
Rum-Tum Tugger.
That would have been
like, okay, great.
Yeah, that works. That works for me. He basically does a whole James Brownish performance, which is... He's a great dancer. That sequence looks pretty neat. The set pieces are cool because they do like a milk bar thing and a food truck thing.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the song is 100% forgettable.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, I went home after seeing this movie last night and could remember, outside of Memories, the one song that anyone knows from this, one thing from this movie. And it wasn't even the one that I really liked. It was just the Mr. Mistopheles one because they did the chorus 10 million times.
Yeah, and the only one I could remember
And I couldn't remember the verses of it, just the chorus that they repeated.
Yeah, the only thing I could remember was Skimble Shanks, because that was kind of my break moment.
Oh, I loved it.
It's a killer song.
But then I got home and I was like, I can't remember how that song goes, and it was one I liked.
So Jason Derulo, I'm sorry, Rum Tum Tugger has snuck into Jenny Annie Dots' house and is chased out. And then he does his song where he's revealed that, or it's revealed that he is the cat who is like, I want to go outside when I'm inside and inside when I'm outside. Also, I fuck.
Yeah.
It's very important.
He is the cat that fuck.
He's the cat that fucks. He doesn't have sex, Max.
Rum Tum Tugger fucks.
Because he's one of the two that gets all the eye fucks from Victoria.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's got like an entire audience of I want to sex you lady cats.
Yeah, they do a whole thing where he's doing some James Brown's like moves up on a stage and there's like an audience of sexy lady cats. Which, by the way, maybe we should talk about that real quick. About
how sexy these lady cats are.
Well, everyone's doing like a shoulder roll thing in this movie all the time, which I think is sexy. Also, the lady cats have mostly been stripped of bosoms.
But not really.
And also, they take great advantage of the fact that the genitals have been removed from everybody to just splay them legs.
Well, yes.
Notably, Rebel Wilson in particular is just like, look at this. Look in here.
I gotta say, very disappointed we did not get any cat anus.
I know, I really wanted some cat anus.
How dare they not have a point where some cat just goes right across the front of the frame with their butt in it, and then you're like, get out of the way.
But the important point that I would like to make at this time is that Jason Derulo as Rum Tum Tugger could get all the cat anus he wants.
Indeed.
I think that's we're both trying to say that and are in agreement. So he does his whole fun song, and I wish I could say more about it. It's just neat. Meh. But then at the end, we get a shadow cast on the wall, and everyone's scared because he's got a hat on, like McCavity's hat. And they're all worried, but it turns out, it's just Bustopher Jones.
Good old Bustopher Jones.
Answering the question, what would it look like if James Corden had replaced Mike Myers in that Cat in the Hat movie? Because he has the exact same
I immediately
look.
Went to Halloween.
What if James Corden was in Halloween in a big fat cat
replaced
costume?
Michael Myers in Halloween.
Season of the Witch, which he was not in.
I mean, he was technically in it in that he was on the TV.
Yeah. Okay. So, but no, he comes out looking for all the world like Mike Myers' Cat in the Hat, like the same black and white, the same long extended face.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable how close he looks to that horrible performance.
And Bustopher Jones's entire thing is he's essentially a cat that pub crawls
because
he is fat. Just like Jenny Anydots, but instead of it's because he's lazy, it's because he goes from like pub to pub and people give him scraps. Plus and he gets into trash. And
He's basically the Heathcliff to her Garfield.
Exactly.
I mean the old TV show Heathcliff and not the one who just stands there with his eyes closed and observes the garbage ape.
Yeah. He does not show up with a helmet that says ham.
Yeah. Oh, ham helmets are in season this year, says a says a passing policeman or something.
Two birds. Well, I guess we all know what time it is. No, we don't, birds. We do not.
Yeah, the Heathcliff comic strip has become a weird place. A weird, wonderful place.
The Heathcliff comic strip is basically more like the musical Cats now than anything else.
Yeah, but this is like the TV show Heathcliff, where he's just always eating a bone he found in a garbage.
Yeah.
So he sings a whole song about being fat and being a fat cat and how it's fun to be a fat cat.
Yep. And he's like, I get all the food and everyone loves me. And
throughout the last two songs, both Jenny Anydots and, or sorry, between the Rum Tum Tugger and the Bustopher Jones songs, Jenny Anydots is standing around providing color commentary, which
is like, I could dance like him doing to Rum Tum Tugger.
Yeah. And he just wants to get he wants a new life so he could just get fat again.
He wants to be skinny so he can get fat all over.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm really getting sick of Rebel Wilson, which was perfect because it was the exact moment when McCavity shows up and just disappears her.
Like, hey, I'm McCavity. Oh, I'm going to disappear you into nothing.
You should be scared of me. And she's just like, I am. And then he goes, ineffable. I mean, I'm not kidding. He goes ineffable. And then
they disappear.
That time. He also manages to make people disappear by saying, cat. And
McCavity.
McCavity. And magic.
Yep.
It's a different word every time.
But every time, it's basically just make people disappear.
It's an amazing set of tricks. I still can't believe that he's doing this after he got mad about being Heimdall. It's like, I'm not getting enough to do as in these Thor movies. I want to
dress up like a cat, which is to say, in a green bodysuit, so mm-hmm. that they can CGI fur onto me, and then show up once every hour and go, ineffable.
There's also a song later in the film. I believe it's Taylor Swift's, where she has to rhyme ineffable with effable.
If anyone's effable, it's Idris Elba.
It's or Rum Tum Tugger, apparently. But no, she doesn't use it in terms of he could be fucked. He's knowable. He's both ineffable and effable.
So the end of Bustopher Jones is McCavity tricks him into going down basically a pipe that he has trash on as mm-hmm. like a tiger trap.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone gets freaked out because McCavity is there and Victoria's all alone. And that's when she gets taken in by two thieves, Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser.
Now, if you're not familiar with the Cats musical, you may find yourself wondering why there's a cat named Mungo Jerry when there is very clearly a band called Mungo Jerry who did that In the Summertime song,
mm-hmm.
which actually is a pretty sexist song. But anyway, it's because they were inspired by the T.S. Eliot poems. Weirdly, they are older.
They are pre-Cats musical.
Yeah, they are older than the musical. They were specifically inspired by the poems as well.
Which is weird
mm-hmm.
that anyone would be like, yeah, you know where I take real inspiration from? A bunch of dumbass poems about cats.
I mean, are we just taking shots at Andrew Lloyd Webber right now?
No, we're taking shots at T.S. Eliot right now, baby.
Because, I mean, if anyone was inspired by those poems, it was clearly Andrew Lloyd Webber, who went and made a big hit musical out of them. I mean, okay, so also throughout the course of these first three songs, we consistently see Grizabella in the margins, playing effectively Grizabella the homeless cat.
Yeah.
And they call her the glamour cat.
It's she was Grizabella the glamour cat, but then she decided to go off with McCavity at some point and is now...
We do not get enough explanation for why everyone hates her and she has to limp around like she's the person being sung about in that Phil Collins song about a homeless person.
Yeah. Another Day in Paradise.
That's the one. Thank you.
But the whole thing is...
You can see that she's been there. That one.
I guess the whole point is, she used to be respectable and she fell in with the wrong crowd, a.k.a. McCavity.
Yeah.
And now, like, they found her, I guess, like, strung out somewhere, and now she's just
They're not letting her back in. The mean girl cats in this movie mostly exist to hiss at her whenever she shows herself.
Yeah. They hiss and are like, get the fuck out of here.
Get out of here, you. No one ever forgives you for fucking McCavity or whatever you did.
Yeah, I guess.
Well, the thing the movie really needed that I'm sure it's not in the musical, which is why it's not in the movie, but the thing that they could have added to the movie that would have helped immensely was a McCavity and Grizabella scene. Just one where he was like, I did this to you or whatever.
Well, you can always come back to me.
Yeah. No, you can't because I've tossed you aside. Now no one will have you.
Who just, would have you now?
That's the plot of the movie, everybody. McCavity. And then he just like disappears himself. Movie plot.
Fear.
So, that would have been very helpful to explain why everyone's so mean to her. But she's just sort of wandering the margins. And Victoria mostly exists to be like, who? Who's that random homeless shambling cat? Don't look at her. We have to teach you lessons about Mungo Jerry and Rumple Teaser, who apparently are thief cats.
Yeah. They are cats that are street cats that if you leave your window open will fuck your shit up.
Yeah, they are probably the most outdated type of cat in the... Because, you know, a lot of these cats are written in old T.S. Eliot poems, right? So they're kind of, there isn't really so much a railway cat anymore as there used to be. But these two are like, oh, you know, the feral cats that get in your house and kill your baby and eat your roast.
You know,
like, these don't happen so much anymore.
You know, when you have to have your window open because AC and heating and anything else doesn't exist.
Yeah, and there's too much typhus in the house right now.
And a cat gets in and just like scratches up your pillows and stuff. Yeah, that.
Yeah, when he like Kramers up your toilet real bad.
Kramer's out the window.
Rumble Teaser.
So yeah, Mungo Jerry and Rumble Teaser essentially are there to try and corrupt Victoria into being like, oh, look how fun it is to just like steal jewelry and food and mess up people's houses, and oh, we don't have any morality because we're two burglar cats.
It's really weird that this, I'm not sure what's going on with where they set these two up as like bad guys because they want to rob the humans and so on, but there's no bit in the musical or the movie, as far as I'm aware, of anyone being like, it's nice to be nice to humans and not mess up their shit and let them pet you and love you and hang around a bit. I mean, there's not there, that song doesn't exist, so it's like, I don't know that Bustopher Jones gives a fuck about humans either. I'm not sure he's like, no, I wouldn't go into a house and fuck it up. That's a mean thing to do, and I'm a friendly cat.
Well, I think so, given that the real, like, and sort of shown villains of this are those two and McCavity, who has broken every human law.
It's true. He has broken every human law.
And they specifically say human law. I know. So you have to imagine that's a bad thing for cats.
But John, know they not cat law?
No, he has broken no cat laws. Because there are no cat laws. The only law is be jellical.
Yeah, which I have to assume that Rumple Teaser and Mungo Jerry are not jellical. Because they're thieves, and jellicle is just, you know, a bastardization of the term dear little.
But I think they are, because, I mean,
do you think they're up for the, they're not up for the Heaviside Layer promotion?
No, but I think that they are part of the jellicle cats. They're just assholes, in the same way that McCavity is technically jellicle.
I don't think he counts. I don't know. I have no idea if he's jellicle or not.
Because he could have been the jellicle choice, but she was like, no, I won't choose you.
But she also says never. You'll never be the jellicle choice, and you should just quit trying. So just die somewhere regular style, you asshole. Anyway, the two of them do a number which really calls into question all of these set choices in this movie, which we have not addressed up till this point, that the cats are supposed to be cat size, so they put them in a world of giant cars and so on.
Yeah,
but they get the proportions wrong at a dizzying pace that rapidly erodes your basic understanding of the world.
Yeah, especially in this one, because usually it's just sort of background sets, and the sets will remain the same size regardless of what's going on.
Yeah.
But here, you're like, oh, we've got a background set, but now we actually have something that's like a thing we need you to hold.
Yeah, they pick up props and act with them here, which otherwise doesn't happen much, aside from a moment that we probably should go back to, when Jenny Anydots randomly picks up a weird pink pseudopod.
I mean, eh.
I mean, it's gross. It looks like a brief moment of H.R. Giger, where it's clear that they gave Rebel Wilson a pink thing to sing into, and they're like, we'll make it your tail in post, don't worry about it. And then they just didn't.
Yeah.
And she just picks up a gross, pink, fleshy, floppy hose, and just is like, he's like, I'm lazy, and I'm fat, or whatever. And then she throws the thing away, and you're like, what the fuck was that? And it's never seen again. But in this scene, in the Mungo Jerry Rumple Teaser scene, we see her put on a human ring as a big old heavy bracelet. And I'm like, that doesn't work on a cat.
That's not a correct size.
Yeah, what are you doing? But that's just regular. Also, they keep picking up size-changing food that they steal from human tables.
Oh, yeah, they're like, oh, I picked up this rack of ribs, but now it's the exact same size as, like, my head? That's a very tiny rack of ribs you have there.
Yeah. We'll see what's a rack of cat ribs. That's why we're mean to the humans. They eat us in this world.
Ah.
In this world, the cat underworld that we live in, humans stalk the world as demons. But anyway, they do this whole dumb song, and then at the end, they hear a dog barking.
Yeah.
And so Rumple Teaser and Mungo Jerry are out.
Yeah, they fuck off. Mm-hmm. And Victoria gets caught on the jewelry she has stolen.
Yeah.
Oh, hoisted by her own petard.
If there's one thing in this movie that is a serious disappointment, if I could cite one issue that I have with this otherwise perfect film,
this impeachable cinema.
It's both impeachable and unimpeachable.
Peachable.
And peachable. I'm peachable. You could peach me pretty good. Pretty easy. I would not.
I get peached.
Yeah. It's that we don't get to see what the fuck this dog looks like. I mean, we get to see the cockroaches and the mice, and they just have the faces of human children, and they're terrifying. But the dog, I really wanted to know what a dog in this world is.
Like, if it would just show up and be another dude.
I was really hoping. And I even, during the performance, I said this to John, I really hope that's just Stephen Fry barking. Not in any kind of costume, just barking. It just shows up, bark, bark, bark.
Bark, I say.
Bark. Well, you'll find this quite interesting. Bok.
But no. Mistoffelees shows up and saves her. Hooray. Now it's time for them to get back over to the Jellicle Ball.
Yeah. And then I think this is pretty much the moment when the Jellicle Ball is about ready to begin. I don't think we get anyone else's major songs.
No, not right now.
Yeah.
Now, what we do get, though, is...
Well, since Bustopher Jones and Jenny and Edots are both disappeared now, we go to visit them and see where they've been disappeared to.
Some boat and...
Some barge on the Thames.
Fucking being guarded by Growl Tiger.
Mm-hmm. Growl Tiger apparently is a cat who is now completely under McCavity's thumb, but he used to be the terror of the Thames. And he begins to sing a little song while he's threatening them, and they interrupt him, and they just shut off.
Well, yeah, they're like, this isn't a movie that we are going to put every song into, so sorry, no.
No, instead we have a brand new song for someone else, because we want Taylor Swift to sing something instead of...
Well, it's not a new song, she just sings the McCavity song.
That's true. She's a new character there to sing the McCavity song, presumably because Idris Elba was like, no.
Nah, I'm good.
Pass. Okay, so... So, yeah, we get to see that, and he does the horrifying thing where he has human hands that have cat claws sprouting out of them, because he pokes Bustopher in the head with one.
Yeah.
Which is nice, because Bustopher and Jenny are just going through their improv-y shtick, which is just not great. They're just like, oh, this isn't this, look what the cat dragged in. Oh, I could boff a hairball about this. He's like, oh, I wish you two would die.
but
least they don't. At least they've grouped up the fat cats and put them off from the rest of the film.
Now, yeah. When we get to the Jellicle Ball, and we get, you know, the introduction to Griselda here, where she's like
Grisabella, mm-hmm.
And then we also get the introduction of the idea of old Deuteronomy.
This is Munkastrap going his most Grima worm tongue in this movie. Is apparently he is the completely in love with old Deuteronomy cat.
A sycophant.
Yeah, he is 100% under her thumb. He doesn't want to go to the Heaviside layer because he'd have to leave her. So he sings a whole song about how wonderful and magnificent old Deuteronomy is.
And then she shows up, and mm-hmm. Dame Judi Dench.
Oh, boy.
Even more so than any of the other human hand cat things in this, it's worse for me with Judi Dench because it's coming out of a giant coat, so it makes the hands look even smaller.
They look more human.
And it's just like, oh, no.
And they've given her a big old Persian cat ruffle. So she's all fluffy. And the problem with that is between the human hands and the big fluffy all the way around the head mane, she just looks like Bert Lars, the Cowardly Lion. Like she just looks like a light pink version of the Cowardly Lion. And it's very noticeable for most of it. It's like all the rest of them are CGI cat monsters. And Dame Judi Dench is in costume. Also, so is Ian McKellen for the most part. His outfit is, because he is wearing all the clothes.
He's like, nah.
No.
Oh, I don't think so.
Just put,
I'm Ian McKellen. Perhaps you didn't notice.
So, yeah, she gets a brief song here about how she's, like, gonna...
Super old, and she gets to pick the Jellicle choice.
Yeah, oh my God. Her opening lines of dialogue in this movie where she's just like, yes, I am the Jellicle cat, and once a year, I assemble a Jellicle ball, and at that ball, I choose a Jellicle chat cat. We call it the Jellicle choice. And I was just like, oh my God, if I could replace the opening narration from Lord of the Rings with this, I would be the happiest person in the world. Whispers grew into fear, and I am the Jellicle cat.
So now we get a 20-minute fucking dance break that is the worst thing in any movie that's ever happened.
I know, there's no dialogue, it's just a long dance break. This is the moment where I turn on Munkastrap. Up until now, I've been like, Munkustrap's all right. He's just the narrator cat. He's fine. But at this point, he starts turning into that guy. It's a specific type of guy that it's not always guys. It's a specific type of person who, I don't know if everyone else thinks of this stereotype as well. It's the unassigned announcer man at parties. The one who's like, oh shit, something interesting is happening. I better run over there and announce it. Like,
yeah, see, that's not a thing I have any clue of what you are talking about.
Maybe it's just me that I encounter this person at parties more often than most. It's not just announced, but he's like, in this movie, he does do that. He's just like, at the end of a long dance number, he'll just show up and be like, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Victoria. And she's like, yeah, I just finished the dance break. Please don't do, you didn't do shit. Get out of here. No one hired you to do that, Munkustrap.
Well, I mean, someone very specifically hired him to do that.
It was old Gus, the theater cat.
So yeah, lots of dancing. It's terrible and boring. I mean, not for the first bit, because you're like, oh, these are very good dancers, but then it just keeps going forever, and you're like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, so we're setting up the Jellicle Ball. We're in some abandoned theater, and, I mean, ultimately, it's very confusing, the performance. First of all, there's not as many cats there as you'd think there should be, because there's a point where Ian McKellen as Gus the theater cat, and before you think, hey, that guy's got a regular name, what the hell? No, his name's Asparagus. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, he just goes by Gus because it's easier.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if Gus is his human name and Asparagus is his cat name.
I don't know.
And then his secret name, of course, we could never possibly know.
No.
Mm-hmm.
It's Ian.
Stormcrow, I call him. Anyway, or Loneway among the elves. He has to do a performance, apparently. Apparently, it's part of the Jellicle Ball. He comes out and he sings about how he's old, and he used to like the theater, and nowadays he doesn't know what's up with the theater.
He was a cat that was at theater, and he basically, it was, oh, what's this? Oh, it's a cat that goes to theaters, and all the actors like him.
But I don't know why he's doing, like, is this his Jellicle audition?
Yes.
Because it doesn't seem that way. It seems like it's just part of the regular show. Like, oh, before the festival, because literally after he's done, Judy Dench's old Deuteronomy is like, and now we will commune the Jellicle Ball, where the Jellicle cats perform their Jellicle numbers to convince me. And I'm like, so wait, was he like the opening act?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Mistopheles goes to get him and is like, you're on in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Can I say I'm a big fan of yours?
Yeah. And he's like, oh, very good. I shall go and do my performance. I shall be on between Hinder and before Taking Back Sunday. Ah, the opening acts.
So, yeah.
He does a song about how kids these days aren't actors the way he used to be.
Yeah, I used to be able to do anything, and I could just move with perfect precision as an actor and mm-hmm. do any role.
Especially my favorite role, which was like
Fire for Frelin.
Yeah, Fire for Flare. Of the Fiend of the Fell.
God, can I say right now, I wish this movie had subtitles, because I would say about 50% of what got said in this, I had no idea what was being said.
Oh, it's completely true. Like, even the Memory song, which is a banger and I should know off the top of my head anyway, by the time they were done with it, I was like, I do not know why people don't like her. I don't understand. Is it the snot? Is it just the snot?
Do you snot too much?
I don't understand what she did wrong. Is this song about what she did wrong?
Ugh.
Yeah, so he does his Fiend of the Fell song,
And McCavity disappears him.
Yeah, McCavity disappears him. And then we get a break where Victoria sneaks outside for a second. Grisabella's out there, and she does a pre-prease of Memories, because Memories is the, you know, the banger song. It's the single.
It's the one people know.
It's the single. So she does a little bit of it. And this has some bad optics to it, because Memories is clearly like, I'm a wronged person and my life's been super hard. And then out comes Victoria, who's like, you think you have it bad? I've got my whole life ahead of me, and I'm young and beautiful. It's the worst. Just like, shut up, you. It doesn't help that they made her a Lily White. Now, I know that Francesca Hayward in real life is a POC, but in the movie, she is the Lily Whitest of cats.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, given that it's like, oh, who are the two outcasts here? Oh, McCavity and Grisabella. Ooh, you got two black people for that, and that's, ooh, that's a choice.
I would not have recommended that. Yeah, I believe Francesca Hayward is half black, so if it wasn't for the CGI, this scene would be a lot less colonizery.
I also want to say that the rendition of memories here is basically like someone saw Les Mis.
Yeah, it's very Les Mis.
And was like, oh, if they can get away with just cry singing in that movie, I can get away with it here. I won't actually sing. I'll just cry the lyrics.
Yeah, well, I mean, luckily it's just the pre-prees because she's going to come out and do the whole song later.
Oh,
it's...
God, I was so glad when that happened. I was like, oh, thank you for actually singing the song instead of just coming in and sadly crying the lyrics like a depressed, damn it, I was going to say William Shatner. I almost said James Kirk.
I would like to see James Kirk sad crying out memories.
I mean, who wouldn't?
Memories. Out of the corner of my mind.
Yeah, no. Anne Hathaway in Les Mis influenced that too much.
A little bit, yeah. But then we get Victoria, who's just... At least we get a really cool line out of Victoria's song, which was the, I have nothing, at least you have beautiful ghosts.
Yeah.
Which is a cool line. I appreciate that a great deal. Luckily, as it turns out, this whole lovely exchange between these two cats is viewed from the window by old Deuteronomy.
Indeed.
Who has a whole song she sings to herself about methods or something, which it felt like... The whole song felt like that scene in Lord of the Rings where Ian Holm's doing the 111th birthday party announcement, where he's just like, I like less than half of you, half as well as I should like, and half of you, half as well, is liking half of me. You know, that kind of thing? That's what her whole little number here sounds like. Well, she's doing the method, but the preparation of the method is not what she is doing. It's like, okay.
Great.
All I know is that it means you're going to choose Grisabella later. Thank you. Thank you. Now we go back inside, and finally Judy Dench is like, and now the Jellicle Ball can commence, in which each cat shall come forward and sing their numbers. And you're like, oh good, the plot's about to happen. We're going to get the Grisabella thing. Everyone's already kind of sang their songs, so we should be good to go. I hope they don't just all come back in and are like, I'm Jenny Anydots and I'm really fat. And you're just like, you did this already. This isn't smart. But then she goes, and we shall start with Skimbleshanks the Railway Cat. And you're just like... Who? What?
And they do a little verse about Skimbleshanks before he shows up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he shows up, Skimbleshanks owns screen.
It's weird because he'd been in the room the whole time. Because he's very clearly the one cat wearing red suspenders. So you can see him in background shots before his introduction, which whatever, I don't care, it's fine. But boy, oh boy, is his song baller.
Yeah, and one of the few songs that gives you the cat from the cat point of view, because the other ones are just like, oh, I'm fat and I wander around, or like, oh, I go in and I go out. But this one is like, oh, yeah, the train can't run without me, because I'm the railway cat, and of course I follow behind the porter whenever he checks tickets just to make sure he's doing it correctly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, not only is this song baller as hell, it slaps.
Also, the reason that they put him in pants is because he's going to do a tap number, which is incredible. Now, about 3/4 of the time, when I'm seeing tap performance, I can't tell if they're actually dancing or if they're just fucking with us and moving their feet really fast. Yeah. Just sort of like
and
a
then
random...
they just added in noise after.
Yeah. Well, you can see they have metal crap on their shoes. So just...
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell if they're like, oh, I'm doing a planned and practiced routine, or if they're just sort of flipping out with their feet a little bit. I don't know. The difference between a person having a seizure and a person doing really good tap is mostly the music choice, as far as I can tell.
The music choice. Ooh, bad music choice. I think they're having a seizure.
But this is a really solid tap performance. It's incredibly cool to watch.
Yeah.
So this is an awesome, this gives me a lot of life for a song I'd never heard of. I mean, as a casual Cats acquaintance, I knew what Memories was, full stop.
Yeah.
This song is ballin'.
But Skimbleshanks finished and gets sucked into the air.
Well, he does a spinny tap move and flies into the air. Yeah.
Because McCavity has disappeared him as well.
And it doesn't, McCavity, this is the only time where McCavity doesn't say a word. He just cackles invisibly from the distance. So the audience and the people, I'm sure the cats in attendance as well, were like, did he just get, is this part of it?
Part of it.
Part of it. The spinny dance ending is the finale.
Where I disappear into the sky, part of my act.
Also, here's the question I had about all this. Why does Skimbleshanks want to ascend to the Heaviside Lair? He clearly is content and happy and has a job that he feels responsible for.
That's why I think it's because they're all dead.
Even then, it seems like he's settled into being dead, and you can tell a lot of these cats...
No, because he wants to go back and be a railway cat again.
I guess that's fair, because a lot of these cats don't even try. Like, Munkastrap's not like, I'm Munkastrap, please consider me. I would be a great narrator cat in the Lurth as well. Like, all the mean girl cats. It's not like they're like, oh, pick us. We'll do, I don't know.
We were assholes when we were alive.
Yeah, they're just not even trying. But Skimbleshanks puts on a whole number, and I'm like, it feels like he's, of all the cats, he's the one who's like, no, I don't want to ascend to the Heaviside Lair. I got to be at work in the morning. Some of us work for a fucking living, Jenny Any Dots.
And that is why I think they're dead.
That's fair.
Because he can't go to work in the morning because he's dead.
Well, this musical was written in the 70s, John. I have news for you. They're all dead.
Hang in there, baby.
All the cats of cats are dead.
Then we get the McCavity song.
Oh my God, Bombalurina.
Taylor Swift comes down and is probably going to be some poor young teenager's furry root.
Oh, well, yeah, because of all the cats in the film, she's the one where they left the boobs on.
Yeah, and she's just like, yeah, McCavity.
Well, they had to leave the boobs on her because she does that top shoulder boob shake move more than once in her dance number.
Oh, yeah. Whereas everyone else is just sort of doing like
ballet,
we're
mostly
slinky,
yeah,
and dancing. She's like, I'm sexing at the camera.
Mostly, this is a Taylor Swift performance stuck randomly into the middle of the film. She pops up and just does a regular tit. She has backup dancers. The mean girl cats get into it.
The whole point of this, though, is that she is dropping catnip as well as Mungo Jerry and Rumpelteazer.
And Griddlebones.
And Griddlebones, who does not get named.
Yes, she does. That's why I was so confused. At the very end, Deuteronomy's like, or not Deuteronomy.
Oh,
she's,
yeah.
Yeah. Someone pops up and is like, catch them. It's Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry and Griddlebones. They're the ones who catnipped everybody. And I'm like, nah, dude, it was Bombalurina. Get her. Come on, man. Bombalurina does a rad song. There's a staircase that appears for her and McCavity to dance on, and then the camera pans away from her, and she is gone.
Oh, yeah. She does come back, but, yeah, she was like, and that was me. But during the McCavity song, Idris Elba shows up, sans giant coat he has been wearing.
Oh, my God, he strips it. You see him take it off, and it is horrifying.
And at that point, it really is the Porky Pig took his shirt off, because you're like, oh shit, that dude's naked.
Well, here's the problem. With Francesca Hayward, they went, she's like of color of some degree. They made her lily white. With Grisabella, they made her like dark gray, so she doesn't look like her normal skin, Jennifer Hudson skin tones. With Idris Elba, they made a whole cat that is Idris Elba colored.
Yeah, you're like, I'm about to see this dude's dick, ain't I?
Yeah. No, there's no one in a whole movie full of almost nothing but naked people. Idris Elba is far and away the nakedest person.
It is true.
And I mean, we're watching scenes where like Rebel Wilson takes her skin off and she still has more clothes on than Idris Elba ever will. It's, oh my God, is he ever naked?
But yeah, he's like, all right, I got rid of everybody else. I disappeared them or coma'd them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the only one left. I have to be the Jellicle choice. And old Deuteronomy is like, fuck you, buddy.
No.
So he disappears her to the boat,
I mean,
as well.
The question, this is really the thing about the plot that gets me, is he's like, I'm the only one left. You must choose me. And I'm like, dude, who are you talking to? You're in a room full of cats. There's still so many. Go get them. Go get Cocopino or Ludicolo or whatever the fuck. Go catch those Pokemons. You're not done yet. It'd be great if she just was like, oh, you think you've caught them all, do you? The Jellicle choice is Munkastrap.
The Jellicle choice is Mewtwo.
He's just
you
like,
think you caught them all? Who do you think the Jellicle choice is?
It's Pikachu!
Clefairy.
Fuck!
So yes, he disappears her, and then we get Mistopheles as the song, because they're like, hey, you're magic. Bring her back. And he's like, no, I'm a magician. I do illusions, Michael.
This whole thing where he's just like, haven't you guys seen what I do? I just pull like
I can
flowers
do
out of
card
a hat.
Tricks.
It's I can do dice stuff. I don't. It's weird because he pulls out cat-sized cards and then a human-sized die.
Well, yep.
But yeah, they're all just like, you're magic, fix this. And he's like, I am very clearly not magic. It is all illusions. Look, I'm gonna be the Penn Jillette here. What we do is perform stunts.
Yeah. And even the like lyrics to a song is, oh, someone will hear him outside, but he's actually inside. And it's that sort of like, oh, where'd that cat go? I thought I put him outside. Oh, he's in the hall. Yeah. Oh, he's magic because he's never where you think he is.
He's literally magic because you don't notice him.
He's magic because you're like, oh, I heard him on the roof, but he wasn't on the roof. And you're like, okay.
So you heard a noise and you thought it was him. So he's game to, he's like super nervous about it, but eventually he becomes game to like point a pencil at old Deuteronomy's bed and go, eh. And nothing happened. Oh, God damn, I completely forgot. When they catch Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry, we get a nickname.
I was just having a bit of fun. I didn't know he was going to take old Dute.
And I was like, you're telling me that we've been saying old Deuteronomy this whole time when we could have been saying old Dute?
How dare you?
How dare you? I'm never saying anything but old Dute ever again. In fact, every cat in this movie is named old Dute now. Homeless Dute, young Dute, white Dute.
The whole song is just the chorus sung at Mr. Mistopheles over and over again to encourage him to gain the power of summoning.
What's that? Is it, was there ever a cat as clever as Mr. Mistopheles?
Yeah. Oh my, oh, there never was cat so clever as magical Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah, that's the one.
And then they just say it 5 million times.
And then finally we cut to a scene where we see them escaping from the boat. And I don't know, does he magically return
No, he
her?
Magics Deuteronomy
yeah.
back
yeah.
and none of the other cats that have been stolen.
And notably when she comes back, because she doesn't appear in the bed. She just walks in off stage behind
everybody.
Yeah,
because everyone's looking at the cat bed and she's like, oh, now I'll do the chorus by myself. And then we'll do the chorus 10 more times. Mm. Okay, here we go.
Here's a few more copies of the chorus. You know what? Here's Jenny Anydots' song again. Whatever. We cut 18 songs from this musical, by the way. So to like make him feel good about how great of a job he did.
Yeah, they're
at
like,
this point,
good job.
It's very clear that him and Victoria have fallen in love.
Yeah, they are definitely, a little too much on each other.
They got some sniffs.
And
they give each other some of them bro sniffs.
Gus, Jenny, and Bustopher manage to escape.
Well, and Skimbleshanks. Don't forget Skimbleshanks.
Oh, yeah, Skimbleshanks is there. I keep forgetting he was there.
Yeah, so effectively, they use their various powers that have been established over the course of the film to defeat Growl Tiger and escape. So
Jenny manages to get out of the chains that her and Bustopher are in by peeling her skin off
to reveal
and sliding
her
out of the chains.
Yeah, to reveal her halter top hot pants combo again. And then she hits herself in the face with the chains. Bustopher Jones coughs up a hairball at Growl Tiger. And then
Skimbleshanks tap dances him to the edge of a plank.
Aggressive combat tap dancing is a part of this movie.
Yes, he gets tap danced at.
Yeah.
And then finally, Gus the theater cat
acts so good,
acts like Fire Fro Frelin, the fiend of the fell, so much that it scares Growl Tiger into the water.
Uh-huh. He acts so hard, you guys.
He act so hard.
He trod those boards till they exploded. His hair turned all Super Saiyan.
So, yes, at this point, I think we get Victoria to bring...
She just goes outside again, because we already had a scene where she, like, slips away from the crowd, goes outside, gets the pre-freeze.
It's Victoria goes out and is like, okay, now you need to come inside and tell everyone the song that I heard you doing.
She just does the exact same scene again, but this time she's like, no, come with me. And then she walks her in there, and everyone's all hissing at her and stuff, marches her to the middle of the room and just goes, sing. And you see Grisabella like, what? How the fuck... Who are you?
I ain't your dancing monkey. Get the fuck out of here. I ain't going to sing because you said so.
Bullshit. Meanwhile, you see Monka Strap running from off screen to be like, ladies and gentlemen. No, oh, shit, I missed it. But no, she does Memories, which, you know,
and
it's fucking Jennifer Hudson doing Memories. I don't know what you...
And it kills. And so, of course, old Dute's like, well, you're the Jellicle choice. Duh.
I was really, her rendition of Memories is, I actually didn't much care for the presentation of it here, but her voice is astonishing, so it's fine. The surround, because again, it's just more Mannheim Steamroller, Haunted Woods, circus music, but she's overpowering that and is amazing. I half expected that Futurama scene where Leela just walks up and takes Fry by the hand and just walks her into the bed. But instead, she's like, no, you are the Jellicle choice.
And,
because it'll take you away from us. You'll die. That's
get out of here.
Get out of here. The easiest way for us to get rid of you this time is to strap you to a chandelier on a hot air balloon and get rid of you forever.
And into the air you go.
Goodbye. Please do not come back. We have learned nothing.
Now, at this point, you would think, all right, we've concluded pretty much everything. We've gotten the fact that... we've concluded the ball. McCavity lost.
McCavity specifically jumps on the rope hanging from the bottom of the flying chandelier.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm going to stow away to the heavy side layer and falls.
He falls and lands on, what's his name?
Napoleon, because he's the Napoleon of crime.
Yes, yeah. He announces that. Or it is announced for him during his song.
Yes, that's part of the lyrics,
yeah.
Is that he's the Napoleon of crime.
Yeah, the Napoleon of cat-based human crime.
But... at that point, you would think, oh, we're done.
Yeah.
We're done here because we've done everything we could.
And every
everyone's
cat,
safe.
Yeah.
We've finished the Jellicle Ball.
We had a big chorus escorting her off, Grisabella, where they're all like pointing at her all dramatically.
Oh, yeah.
And they do
You're
a big chorus.
Oh, this is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Nope. Now they all gather outside, and Dame Judi Dench.
Mm-hmm.
Turns to the camera.
This was your break moment.
This is
mine was when everyone used their combat tap dancing powers to scare Growl Tiger off the ship.
Nope, I was still fine then. I was keeping it together. But Dame Judi Dench turns to the camera and says, you know, like, thanks for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to teach you a little lesson about cats. You see, cats are not dogs. And the enormity of the absurdity that I had just watched.
I think the important thing here is
came
the gravita.
Crashing down on
yeah.
me.
The gravita with which she delivers, like looking right into the camera, cats are not dogs.
And
just like
I was like, oh my God, I've been trying to take this film seriously into this point, and then they just pulled the curtain back and were like, no. You've been watching cats introduce themselves for 2 hours. Go fuck yourself. And my mind shattered.
I know.
I began laughing so hard, my stomach hurt.
Yeah.
I could not contain myself anymore.
What we affected?
I died.
There's a movie that we
watched. I went to the heavy side layer.
There's a movie that we watched before we ever started Movie Mastery. Years and years ago, I brought John over to trap him with it. And it's a movie called Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny.
Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny is a movie from the...
It's a Riff Trax thing, but...
Yeah, it's Riff Trax, but it's...
Ultimately, the Riff Trax guys don't add anything that is relevant. Really, it's better without them.
The whole thing is just this sort of, like, multi-layered, like, oh, Santa gets trapped in Florida, and in Florida, some kids go to an amusement park, and in the amusement park, there's... Or no, Santa tells a story of an amusement park, and in the amusement park tells the story of Thumbelina.
Uh-huh, and so you watch Thumbelina from start to finish.
And then Thumbelina goes back, and we go back to the amusement park, and then it brings it back to Santa. So you go down, like, 3 layers and back up 3 layers.
And the whole thing is done with, like, a $45 budget, and everyone's mumbling their way through it.
There's almost no sound quality.
Santa is dirty and disheveled.
I mean, clearly sweating because he's in Florida in a full Santa outfit.
But the movie's about an hour and a half of just boring nonsense forever. And then at the very end, as you're wondering who will rescue Santa, out of nowhere, and the Ice Cream Bunny is a character in this film that you have not seen.
No.
In fact, by the time you see him, you have forgotten that he is a part of the movie.
Yeah, you're like, oh, this is called Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny, and we have gotten none of that.
And
turns
then,
out,
right?
the Ice Cream Bunny was a mascot.
A mascot
for this
costume.
Amusement park, because this was all basically made by the amusement park.
Now, he comes riding through the amusement park, which is disgusting, by the way. The amusement park has, like, lots of standing Florida water all over it.
Oh, it's, yeah.
Just looks horrifying. But he's on an old-timey fire truck, and he's just this cheap rabbit mascot costume with, like, creases in the costume where they keep it folded.
He shows up to help Santa... And there is a point where he's like, it's my old friend, the Ice Cream Bunny.
As I expected and established.
And the Ice Cream Bunny begins sort of nodding. But in the background, what is added to this scene is the MST3K or Riff Trax guy is going, oh, ho, 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 oh, ho. And when that happened in that movie, I broke. I could not breathe anymore. My reality shattered, and I saw through the illusions of life.
It was, check it out for yourself if you haven't. Just go to, I think it's on the Riff Trax website. You can find Santa and the Ice Cream Bunny. If you, it's an endurance test to sit all the way through it to the end of it. But if you can, it will destroy you.
And that is the exact reaction I had to the end of Cats. Now, I was done.
It hit me earlier than that. When like I said, when you saw, finally got to see Skimbleshanks, who was introduced 3 minutes ago, having the cathartic release of his superpower tap dancing used to defeat our mighty foe. I was like, I can't with it.
I honestly don't even know what the last song was, because I was incoherent through most of it.
It's just Judi Dench doing some random number. Because it's not just Cats Aren't Dogs. It's also like,
oh, if you want to be friends with a cat, you gotta give them cream or some shit.
Yeah, give them cream or salmon pate. And she just, there's a long list of things you could offer a cat. And then finally, don't be aggressive with a cat. Be aloof, and the cat will be aloof. And eventually, the cat will sleep on you, and you'll be like, yay, a cat. And that's pretty much that her song. It's just that. And it's her and Mistopheles and Munkus Strap and Victoria sitting on top of a pedestal as all the other cats are like exulting around them. And you're like, how did Munkus Strap get up here? Well, I guess because he's the seneschal.
He is the sycophantic hanger-on.
He's the grand vizier of cats. And Mr. Mistopheles, of course, did the rescue. And I guess Victoria is
new,
recognizably the main character. She has PC Halo. And so
at that point, of course, we have to end with like, you truly are a jellical cat. A jellical cat. I'm like, again, say it again.
Come on, say more. Say jellical cat some more.
And that's the end. That's the end of the movie.
That's where it stops.
Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. What's up, John? What's up?
Good Lord. This movie hurt. Now, it's not quite the drug trip that people say it is. But it will definitely destroy your brain at the end.
I mean, I was not expecting the relentless pace of the songs. I thought that they were going to movie it up a little, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they do not.
No. There's barely a plot to hold this together.
Yeah. Which is a very choice.
Yeah, it's a thin veneer over the constant song.
The moment where I didn't say anything between very and choice was me admitting Jellicle.
Jeff,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you real quick. What was your favorite thing in this movie?
Oh, it was the Jellicle part.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I loved how Jellicle this movie was.
The Jellicle part was like so Jellicle because the Jellicle cats were
they could.
They
and
could.
They did.
And they did.
And they did, so they could.
No, I mean, ultimately, I'm going to set aside Jennifer Hudson knocking memories to the heavens and back because that's just obvious. That's honestly, that'll be the thing that gets stripped from this movie for posterity. And say Skimbleshanks' number.
See, the thing is, I liked Skimbleshanks' number more than I did hers. I was like, nah, this is my favorite.
All right, fine. You can have Skimbleshanks. Obviously, Jennifer Hudson performing Memories then. It was incredible. I mean, it's what you want. It was the only. It's probably the reason this movie even happened.
I mean, again, the reason it falls for me is because of the crying. Even in the main performance, you got a little bit of that cry singing.
Yeah, but it's the same place as where it is in the musical. I mean, it's fine. Everything's fine. Ultimately, there's so many movies right now that are going to be coming into existence specifically because we have to capitalize on the existence of Jennifer Hudson. That I feel like this is just another movie that was like it, and they couldn't make a movie just called Memories, which is like,
Jennifer, they could have.
Jennifer Hudson sings the best song from Cats 17 times. So that was, you know, easily the best part of the movie for me. Skimbleshanks, I would also say, was incredibly amazing, but please tell us why. Or pick another part.
I mean, just the performance of it. As I said before, I love the fact that the lyrical choice and the point of view of it, because all the other songs are just like, hey, have you ever seen a cat? This is one. Like, at least that was sort of telling a story.
That's true. I mean, ultimately, the funny thing is, I feel like the Skimbleshanks song is a non sequitur thing, because it's like, the plot's finally getting going, we're starting the ball, and now, out of nowhere, a cat no one's ever heard of, go! But the thing is, he's doing a performance at the Jellicle Ball. Of anyone, he is the most diegetic song.
Of anyone, he is the most Jellicle.
Yeah. He's the one, him and McCavity songs are both performed at the Jellicle Ball
for the Jellicle Ball.
As auditions. And it's like, when you first see his performance, you're like, what the fuck? This came out of fucking nowhere. But then when you think about it, you're like, no, wait, he's only the one cat playing by the rules.
Well, I mean, and Gus.
Oh, sure, but I don't even think Gus is a contender. I think he is. Like I said, I think he's just an opening act. He's just there so that the main band can like do their warm-ups and sound checks and stuff.
Now,
oh, Gus, and I have some merch available.
I'll be at the back of the table. Jeff, what was the worst thing in this movie?
I don't know, the rest of it?
Pick one thing.
I'm going to say the CGI used to obscure the excellent dancing. The problem with a lot of the dancing in this movie is that they are not above taking CGI liberties to bump it up a little bit. So you can never be sure whether you're seeing beautiful human performances or just CGI used to make people speak
someone
go faster.
Made a computer image dance.
There's a moment during the Skimbleshanks song and another one during the Mr. Mistopheles song where people lift up their hats as part of the dance number. And for no reason at all, they have CGI'd mice in there who just either go back under the hat or disappear and run away and no cat remarks on it. And it was just added to the film in post to just add some extra whatever.
Yeah, just punch it up.
Yeah, which I hated. I was like, these performances are excellent. You don't need to have random mice popping out of random hats. So I'm going to say the CGI kind of took away from several of the performances.
Great.
And that'll be me.
Okay.
You?
I'm going to say that 20 minutes fucking dance break, because fuck the dance. I don't care about it. I don't want 20 minutes of dance.
I'll disagree with you on that one, because a lot of that was Victoria doing un-CGI'd ballet, which was gorgeous.
Meh. It was too long. It was way too long.
I guess that's fair. Give her the number.
The other thing is the old Deuteronomy song is the most boring fucking thing I've ever listened to.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you on that one. A lot of the songs in this movie, here's the problem with Cats, the musical. It's got memories.
And then, you know,
35 other songs that you are not going to remember after you heard them.
Some garbage.
Yeah. This isn't Grease, where you can, like, anyone can rattle off most of the Grease songs.
All right. Let's go ahead and give this, each of us, a rating. 0 to 5 gives the movie a rating out of 10, Jeff.
This is one of those ones where I want to give it a high score because it's absurd and people should see it because it provides a cathartic movie going experience. But realistically, I have to say it's about a 2. Like, this movie is more failures than successes. Mm-hmm. And it's just the experience of those failures that's so mind boggling and life changing.
Okay.
What about you?
I'll give it a 3 because it is watchable. I had obviously a lot of complaints, but the production value is very good.
Nah. If the production value was that good, they would have let us see what the fucking dog looked like.
Nah, man, that was just a choice. You don't get to see dogs.
It was a Jellicle choice is what it was.
Honestly, I think I'm going to... It gets the extra point just for putting Jellicle into the vernacular.
Yeah, it's ruined our podcast, that's for sure.
So there you go, a 5 out of 10, a perfect halfway, might be good, might be terrible.
Ooh, it's a mystery. You'll just have to find the one showing in your town still.
Yeah, it's a McCavity mystery show.
Ineffable.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back in a couple weeks with
Magic.
More movie mastery.
Cats!
Until then... If you want to listen to any of our other stuff, you can go to our website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com. All of our podcasts are there. Or if you want to support us, you can get everything on one feed over at Patreon.com/SystemMastery. Has everything, and you can make it so we get to keep doing dumb crap like this.
Yeah, that's the best way to go. That single RSS feed will give you all 3 of our shows plus all of our bonus content that you have personally unlocked. It's way easier to organize than any other method.
Yeah, if you're a fan, that's the best way to do it.
You got it.
So we'll be back. Be sure to stop by our Discord if you want to suggest a movie to us.
Sure.
And we will eventually have the poll for next month up, although it might just be that we're forced to go see another shitty movie from this month. Who knows? But until such a time as we do that, you have a good one.